listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. You might remember my last visit with Turner Sparks. He's the stand-up comic who opened the first comedy club in China. And when he was here, he told us the story of bringing the first Mr. Softy ice cream truck to China, only to have a local government essentially take over his business. Turner's originally from Sacramento. He's the co-host of the great podcast Lost in America, and he's back in his hometown this week for a show Wednesday night at the Punchline. Hi, Turner. Glad to have you here. Thanks for stopping by.
I'm excited to be here.
You always have such fun stories. I have to start with this one about the first ever Chinese language comedy show at the Comedy Cellar in New York City.
Yes.
Go.
Okay, this was a disaster. We'll start with that. Here's what happened is, I don't know if anyone's seen Crazy Rich Asians. Ronnie Chang is a comedian in New York City.
Wow.
And also Des Bishop's another guy. These guys perform at the Comedy Cellar all the time. They both, Ronnie's from Malaysia, but everyone, it's a group of people who we all speak Chinese from some reason or another. Malaysia from Singapore or me, who lived in China. And so we got this idea to do this Chinese language show at the Comedy Cellar, where Ronnie performs regularly. And which is also, Comedy Cellar's like the biggest club in New York City and one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the most well-known clubs in the world.
And to be very clear, meaning you were not going to speak English. This was all going to be in Chinese.
All in Chinese. So it's like how my life goes, which is, hey, do you want to perform at the Comedy Cellar for the first time in your life? I'm like, yes. And they're like, but you have to do it in Chinese. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm like, okay, well, if this is the way I can get in to do the Comedy Cellar at some point, I have to do it. I've never performed there in my life. And it's like playing at Yankee Stadium. If you're like, to start out as a little league baseball player, just be like, do you want to play at Yankee Stadium? You're like, yes, but you have to play cricket, you know? Like, wait, I've never done that before. Well, you have to do it now. And so I'm like, whatever, I'll do it. You know, you like lie to yourself because you're like, I really want to do this thing. So I'll just, I know I speak Chinese and I know I do comedy, but I've never put the two together.
Oh, you hadn't?
I'd done it once in my life 7 years ago in China and I bombed. Everyone laughed, but more like laughed at me. As opposed to, like, that was a funny joke, like, you're an idiot, like one of those laughs. And so I'm like, well, I can do this. I can handle it. And so I write all this material. And you can't necessarily do the same jokes because culturally stuff doesn't equate.
Sure,
so you're writing new material. And my wife's Chinese, so that helps. I can talk about our relationship. So I write all this stuff. I'm super nervous. It's like the first time I've ever done comedy. It feels like the first time in my life. And then we get there, and the comedy club, the Cellar, they're like, okay, we got some bad news. We forgot to market this as a Chinese language show. So half the people, the show's sold out. They're like, that's great. That's great news. And I'm like, it's not necessarily, but tell me the rest. And they're like, so half the people here came to see a show specifically in Chinese. They heard you, they heard Ronnie was on or whoever, and they're excited about this. The other half, the other half of the audience has no idea this is a Chinese show, doesn't speak Chinese, and they're just here for a show. So go. And then they kind of like pushed us out just to figure out what to do. And so half the people are expecting. So Ronnie and Des, the other guy, they're like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go up and host it together. Over the course of hosting it, we'll try to figure out what's going on. And then Turner, you're up first. We'll bring you up.
My palms are sweating
right
now.
Yes, a disaster. And so I'm like, oh my gosh. So then they go on stage together and they have the advantage of being two of them. And so they can kind of, one's doing a saying one sentence in English and almost like an old time like Abbott and Costello sort of thing. They're doing a sentence in English, but then the other guy's saying the same sentence in Chinese or back and forth, and they're riffing it out, but kind of keeping most of the audience involved. And then they do that for a few minutes, and they're like, "Okay, now our next comedian, Turner Sparks," and I go up, and I'm like, "I don't know what to do." So I do the, I was like, "Ni hao," and like that. I think I lost everyone at ni hao, first of all. So, which is hello in Chinese.
Yeah.
And so I say that. I do my first joke.
That's friendly, though. I'd still be with you for a moment.
I just lost them in a sense. Like, half the audience, they're not necessarily even Americans. Like, there's German people who've just flown in. Like, what is going on? We do not know this. What in the hell? What language? And so I'm like, oh, this is Chinese. And so then I do my first joke in Chinese, and half the audience gets it. And then half the audience is like, what? We do not. And so then I just did the second joke in English, and then now the Germans get it, but then the Chinese people are like, what? They're like, oh, Shemot, and Nishol Shemot. Like, they're like, what's going on? And so then I just spoke for the rest of the time about how ridiculous it was. I tried to translate at one point. That didn't work. Because no one likes a joke that's being, what I just said was, and what I'm going to say. And so then I just spoke about how ridiculous it was and just tried to riff out something in English and then sort of in Chinese and that.
Were you getting heckled or booed or anything?
No. So the good thing is after like a minute, everyone understood how stupid the situation was. Like after a couple minutes, they got like, okay, this is something we're seeing now that we will never see again because it will never happen again.
Right.
Because this is such a disaster that it's funny, you know? And so we just kind of ended up talking about that. And then that was fine. But then my friend goes on after me, this guy Gus, and we're supposed to do it in Chinese. He sees what happens to me. He does his whole set in English, and it goes fine. And then he's like, hey, that was pretty good. I'm like, you broke the rules. So that was that. I think we're going to try it again, but market it correctly. It would have been way easier if
you're
it was just...
You're
going to
try it again in all Chinese.
In all Chinese at the Comedy Store.
Why didn't you bring
New
your
York.
Wife up on stage with you?
She didn't come.
Oh.
She didn't come to the show because she said that she would be too embarrassed to see me in Chinese.
Oh. Well, the last time you were here, she wasn't even in the United States yet because she didn't have her green card.
Exactly. So she got that now. And she's living, we're in New York, everything's fine. She comes to see me in English all the time. She's like, yeah, you're really funny in English. But she's like, I don't know what you're going to be like in Chinese. And then she's like, she was worried that she would be, because in regular life, when we speak Chinese, when we go to China and we're speaking to each other in Chinese.
Wait, in regular life when you speak Chinese?
Yeah, well, I do speak Chinese. Yeah, but yeah, I guess, okay, regular life for us.
Okay.
When we speak to her family in Chinese, she's correcting me. A lot.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I would be worried that if I came to your show and you said something incorrectly from the audience, I would correct you and then
you
kind
get
of
offended
mess up what you're doing.
When she corrects you?
No, I kind of ignore it. And then she's
maybe
fine
that's
with
why
it.
You had a problem with the Chinese yeah. at the comedy club. I'm talking with Turner Sparks. He is going to be at the Punchline Wednesday for an all English show.
This one's all in English.
Should we say that for sure? I want to ask you about one other performance. You were in Singapore a week before the Trump Kim summit,
yes.
before the big American North Korean summit,
yeah,
and you performed there.
Yes, I did. I was there for a whole weekend, and if you remember, which it feels like 100 years ago
yeah,
now, but it was
right.
like, it was in May.
You're right.
Yeah.
There was
insane?
Such high anxiety about this, and was it going to be canceled, or wasn't
yes.
it?
So if you remember correctly, it was, it wasn't necessarily on until a few days before.
Yes.
And even when they announced it like a week out. So I think I got there on a Friday, and they might have even announced it the day or two before. And I was hoping, I'm like, oh, I hope they're going to be there. Like, I'll see if they want to open for me or something. And it was amazing. And so I got there, and I expected everyone to be freaking out. And I went on stage, and I was like, what do you guys think about this Trump-Kim summit? And it was just silence. And I was like, do you guys, to the audience, who it's the world event is happening in their city. And they're just like, they were just like, ah, it's, they all thought it wasn't going to happen.
Oh, they didn't know
even like three,
that it was back on.
They knew it was on, but they still didn't believe it. Because they're like, these guys, why would they're not going to come here? Why would they come here? Why would these two leaders of these countries? And I told I was like, what happens if they both get here and they just like it and they stay? They become co-presidents of your country. And they're like, no.
So your opening question is about the summit and they are silent. I think you, of all people, you can handle that. You can handle all kinds of crazy things like the half Chinese, half American
yeah.
audience, can't you?
Yeah, it was more of like a shrug. It was like, eh, like you guys aren't worried? Nah, they're not going to come. Who cares? Nothing's going to happen. They won't be here. And then 3 days later, they were all there. And yeah, it was nuts. I mean, some of them were like, someone was saying like, oh, well, Kim's like, what do you think they're going to do? And someone was like, well, Kim's a millennial, so he'll go shopping. I'm like, I don't know if millennial counts. That's like an American, like a millennial in our generation.
I wonder if millennial is all over the world.
I don't know if it crosses all cultures.
Turner Sparks took Mr. Softy ice cream to China. He had a network of 10 trucks before he became so successful that the local government said, wait, no, I think we're going to run that business.
Yes. There's a certain level of success you want. It's lower than that. You want to be successful in China, but not too successful.
So your comedy club business is still in operation in China, right?
Yeah, we actually just sold it.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hope you made a profit.
We did all right. Yeah,
all right,
yeah, yeah,
that's good. But now back in New York, where there is Mr. Softy, you actually got on a truck, right?
Yes. So I recently got on a Mr. Softy truck in New York. This is for Lucky Chow, which is a show on PBS, and it's going to be coming out in the fall. I don't know what episode we're on, but it's a cross-cultural food show. And so they're like, what if you get the Mr. Softy China flavors? So we had a whole different menu for China.
Oh,
we had a lot of the same, like vanilla and twist and all that, but then we added a bunch of Chinese flavors. And so I got those ingredients when I was in China a few months ago, came back to New York. We served those on the truck in New York City to see what American people thought of the Chinese Mr. Softy flavors, which was pretty hilarious.
So I imagine that one was green tea ice cream.
Yes.
And that's not so out of the ordinary here.
It's not out of the ordinary, but off of a Mr. Softy truck. And Mr. Softy, in New York City, there's like 500 Mr. Softies or something.
You're right, because on the trucks, it's much more like Bomb Pops and push-ups and
exactly.
Captain Crunch bars and things like that.
Yeah, and on the Softy trucks in New York, it's like a Dairy Queen, I guess. But it just feels it would be like if In-N-Out Burger all of a sudden had some crazy flavor. It's such like a standard brand on the East Coast, like In-N-Out is on the West Coast, when people see the Mr. Softy truck, they're not thinking like something nuts.
All right, so what were some of the flavors?
So we did, we had green tea. We had a red bean ice cream, which is just like ice cream with all these red, like the mung beans in it. But it's just the idea of eating a bean out of an ice cream cone.
Yeah, you talked about that before, being one of the flavors on the truck in China.
Yeah, it's like a sweet bean. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was rice cake. So ice cream tastes like you're eating a rice cake.
Oh.
And that was actually really popular.
Huh.
And so the green tea one, you're right, people had before. No one had the rice cake ice cream.
Right.
And a lot of times we make it with rice cake and then we put red beans on top. And that was by far the most popular. Like people would eat it and they'd be like, oh, this is actually pretty good. And then but when you tell them what it was, it sounds gross.
Are you going to order red bean ice cream?
Yeah. And then we had a mango flavor. And it was funny, this one guy, he'd walked down from like upper Manhattan. So he'd walked like an hour. I don't know why. And it was 10 in the morning. And he came up to the truck and he's like, all right, what do you have? And we're like, well, we're serving Chinese flavors. And he's like, you guys got Tutti Frutti? And we're like, I don't know. He's like, when I grew up, we had Tutti Frutti. And I'm like, we have mango. And he's like, I think that's Tutti Frutti. I think that's the same. I think it's just we called it Tutti Frutti. It was mango flavor. And so I gave it to him and I gave him the mango. And he's like, you know what? This is Tutti Frutti. He's like, Chinese people eat Tutti Frutti? I can move to China. I love Tutti Frutti. They do too. So you learn new stuff.
No, you're younger than me. Tutti Frutti was not mango.
Was
and
it
somebody
not?
Out there is going to agree with me. It was like the gum, Tutti Frutti gum, had multiple colors. So you felt like you were getting a rainbow of all those fake flavors of your childhood.
Oh, really?
Like you were getting cherry and lime and grape and
that sounds great.
Blueberry. But if he thought it was mango, well.
Hey, the
whatever.
Customer's always right.
Well, how was it being back on the truck? Were you tempted at all to think, I want to get back into the ice cream business?
Yes, I sort of was. I didn't think I would be at all. And then I got on there and all the like muscle memory started coming back because I was the one on the truck making all the products. And then my co-host on my podcast, he was outside giving out the ice cream to everybody. And so once I got in the mode of starting to make it, I was like, I could just quit everything and work on a Mr. Softy truck again.
Yeah. Well, you are still working on the podcast. What else is going on? You're back here now more often for shows now that you live in the U.S.
A couple times a year. Yeah. And then I tour the U.S. As much as possible. I was just in Texas recently. And I tour Asia as well and do festivals. I'm doing a festival in Rhode Island coming up. I do the China Festival. We have the podcast. We're developing TV ideas. So anything to kind of exactly what I wanted to do, which is do comedy for a living in whatever facet whatever facet I can do it in. You know?
When you come home for holiday meals and you're at the dinner table, does everyone expect you to be cracking the jokes and be the funny one?
No, this is what's ridiculous about my family. I say this, I talk for a living and I talk less. I'm the quietest person in my family. I have the most ridiculous, I think because I get it all out on stage. My brother is a diplomat, and I don't think he gets it, but he thinks he's hilarious. So he lives in Washington, and he has to be serious at work all day. And so then right when he gets off work, he's, like, cracking jokes. And then my mom knows, like, half of Sacramento. And so everyone's loud. And so I usually just sit there. I think it's because I get it out, and they don't. So they need this outlet at the dinner table. So it's insane.
but it's all material, right?
It is. And a lot of it goes in the act.
Yeah. Well, it's always fun when you stop by. Thanks for giving us a little bit of your time, and promise that next time you're in town, you'll come by again.
I would love to. Thank you so much.
Turner Sparks. We're going to post some links to a lot of the work and the projects. There's a funny bit about taking communion somewhere.
The gluten-free body of Christ.
Yeah.
They now have in Brooklyn.
Yeah. So we'll post a lot of that on our website. Enjoy. Thanks, Turner.
Thank you.
That's Turner Sparks, and I'm Beth Ruyak, and that's Insight for today. We're back with another live show tomorrow. Bulimia.